Alex Holmes, Nano1 Materials, thank you for having us here today. Just a quick background on Nano1 Materials. We're a technology company based in Canada that's innovated on the way that cathode active materials are made for lithium ion batteries. Cathode active materials are really important because they make up about half the cost of a lithium ion battery cell. The process in which we've innovated on is a much more efficient process that reduces the cost and reduces the environmental footprint. We are in the process of scaling our technology. We own the only LFP cathode active material plant in Quebec. It's the only one in North America. It's one the only one outside of Asia. And we're using that to demonstrate our technology to target customers for offtake and for licensing of our technology. Our ultimate goal is to grow through the licensing and joint venture of our technology with some early revenues coming in from our existing plant and a development project that is to be built.
Alex, good to speak to you. Yeah, we are talking because you announced the Worley deal to kind of jointly market and deploy cathode plant design. If I can just kind of dig into some of what you just said there, okay? Because a technology company in the battery space generically, you know, sounds good and catchy, but you've got to kind of deliver it here. So in terms of the business plan, licensing means licensing what precisely? I'm trying to understand where the revenue is coming from. Is there one revenue stream, multiple revenue streams? What can you tell me?
Absolutely. So our technology, we call it the one-pot technology. So that is the manufacturing process to bring all of the critical minerals together to make cathode active materials, which is a black powder, essentially. And why that's important is, and how that kind of feeds into revenue streams, is our technology enables the reduction in the operating costs, the removal of significant amounts of water use, and huge waste streams that the current process uses. The current process hasn't changed for 30 years. How that results in revenue for us is we're looking to license the technology with partners globally, and we would be looking to, in exchange for that license, is create a revenue stream in the form of royalties derived from those benefits we bring.
Right. Okay, creating a black mass. What's the feed? What's going into the process? Where's it from?
Our technology is, there's a whole suite of different chemistries of cathode active materials. Our technology is a platform technology in the sense that we can make the different chemistries. So the world's largely at a place today where we have iron-rich chemistries. We refer to that as LFP, lithium iron phosphate. We have nickel-rich chemistries, nickel, manganese, cobalt. And we have manganese-rich chemistries. Manganese, usually no cobalt or very, very low cobalt, still some nickel. So in the case of iron-rich, it's lithium, iron, and phosphates or phosphoric acid. And we're bringing all of those elements together in a process to produce this black mass, this black powder, that then the cell manufacturer can take and mix in a slurry and coat on a foil to produce the cathode side of a lithium-ion battery cell.
Right, so you have to dumb it down for it, because I think there's a big audience here who'd probably be quite interested in this if we can sort of understand it. So you're talking about chemicals. Are you talking about ore being fed in here, which you're processing at the same time, multiple, you know, different types of ores, whether it be, you know, nickel, iron, or cobalt, whatever. What exactly comes into your plant before it comes out as a black mass?
Sure. So let's pick the iron-rich cathodes, the LFP, for example. So lithium carbonate, that's a chemical, lithium chemical, produced by various companies around the world. Iron in the form of iron oxides or iron metal. And that's a fairly pure material. So it's not ore. It has to have been refined. Where we're different than the industry today is we don't go from what's referred to as a battery metal in the form of iron sulfates. We go from iron metals or iron oxides. So that, as an example, the work we're doing with Rio Tinto and why they invested in us is because they have a large supply of high purity iron metals. And then the other one would be phosphoric acid in that case. And so phosphoric acid, which is largely in place in fertilizers, there's various different grades of that. And so those materials come together in our warm pot process in a reactor. They get mixed up into a slurry. They get dried. And then they get put into a big piece of thermal calcinating equipment called a rotary kiln. And that's where it gets cooked. And what you're doing is you're reacting the lithium with the other critical minerals to produce this black powder that then is conductive and can be you put to use in a cell.
Right. Perfect.
Does that help?
It really helps simplify this thing. Okay. So now you've kind of described the process as well, which is great. So that's your product. That's the one pot, as you're calling it. I think that's a brand name that you're using. You've made this announcement with Worley to talk about, you know, marketing and deploying plants. Is that related to this, what you just described, right? You've got to get them. They will help you go and sell that black mass or the ability to create that black mass to other industries. So it's a kind of low entry cost. You don't have to fork out large amounts of capex. You'll sell before you build. Is that the idea?
Yeah. So what Worley brings to the table is we're taking our technology, our one-pot technology, and then all the know-how that Worley has of scaling new technologies, of creating plant designs. They work with some of the largest players in the battery materials space. Is they're bringing their engineering know-how to the table and creating what we're calling a CAM package. CAM stands for cathode active material. So it's a package. It's an engineering package wrapped around our technology. Why that's valuable to the end user, the customer in this case, is they will buy and license that CAM package. They'll essentially get full feasibility stage, if not detailed engineering stage, engineering of a plant with certain key equipment, plus or minus, depending on what the customer wants. And they'll have a much faster timeline to being able to make a final investment decision with the confidence of a global engineering firm standing behind it like Worley. So the intent here is that we jointly market this value proposition to deploy our technology. And we believe with this alliance, we will get there much faster than going it alone.
Absolutely. And that, good move. I like it. It's a strategic partner like that, opening doors for you and reducing your I guess the timeline and cost to that one. Now, talk to me about the, because in your presentation, you talk about the kind of the available market, some pretty big numbers in there. But the reality of doing these things is that, you know, there will be groups who've got existing technologies, existing commitments, and to try and get them to change to yours is a big move. I mean, if they do, how quickly can you move? And why would they do it? What's the commercial imperative? Not the kind of green marketing story. What's the commercial benefit of using your process?
You know, fortunately or unfortunately, people don't really pay for the environmental benefits today. That's the reality. So it comes down to how much are you going to save me in CapEx and OpEx? That's the bottom line. So why a target customer would switch? I think there's probably three things happening in the marketplace today. One is China produces about 99% of LFP, that iron-rich cathode active material we've mentioned. There's two other small plants in the world. One of them is owned by Sumitomo Metal Mining, which is one of our partners, and another one's owned by a small company. There's a major shift happening in the marketplace, and it's been happening, taking place over the last couple of years, and we've seen it coming, where LFP is playing a role in mass market electric vehicles. It plays a role in energy grid storage. Korea today does not make LFP. Japan today does not make it at volumes, and neither does Europe. So as they look at the possible technologies out there today, they know that if they simply copy the way it's done in China, there's really two reasons why they won't be able to do that. One is cost structures. They're just not the same. That's the reality. The second is the supply chain. And in particular, the iron supply chain for the what's referred to as the solid state method technology is only exists in China in scale. So these kind of other global players understand that if we're going to get to about 2 million tons of LFP production outside of China, we need to get there quickly, and we need to work with technologies that dislocate or unlock the supply chains that exist outside of China. And that's really where our technology comes into play, is we can drive down costs. We have a much fewer units of operation, and we can use iron sources in particular that exist outside of China. And so we're really addressing kind of one of the key concerns, is how does a non-China-based entity compete with the China cost structure if it's just copying the same technology? They recognize they have to be, it has to be done differently. And when I say they, I mean the global players out there looking to expand. And really, that's the key here. These are new plants. They're not existing plants because they don't exist yet anyways.
Right. Okay. You've got to sell that vision into a group at the same time, because it's relatively nascent space. I get it. You know, whether you're dealing with LFP or NMC, you know, down the line, or it's a nascent industry. You can go, well, the opportunity's there for it, maybe first mover advantage, and that's fantastic. And with the model you're exploring, it means you'd have to pay for the build of these things. You're just selling a licensing agreement. So on that licensing agreement, have you yet entered any kind of commercial MOUs or other early discussions so you can understand what the economics could be for you?
Well, as part of the Worley Alliance agreement, there's also a license agreement that we've entered into with them. So that's a license agreement to continue to build on the technology together for future targets of the CAM package delivery, if you will, or sales. We have a number of discussions ongoing with parties in both LFP and nickel-rich chemistries for that licensing. And I'd say different parties are looking for different components of the value proposition. So anywhere from they're looking for a full engineering package to they're looking for just a licensing of the technology. So where the conversation tends to lead towards in terms of the economics, if you will, is looking at what is the technology share relative to, or save, I should say, not share, save, relative to the alternatives. And that's where we go through an exercise with each party, and we walk through, and they will have done their homework as well. We walk through, this is the cost structure. If you've kind of copy the solid state process, how it's done in China, and then this is the cost structure using the one pot technology. And then we negotiate around a sharing of those savings. And it largely comes down to probably a component of upfront fees and a component of recurring royalty per production ton.
Right. I mean, it's just everyone listening. I mean, this is exactly the same as another tech space, you know, software, you know, in terms of licensing software to commercial entities. It means different things to different customers, I'm sure. But the way you kind of describe it makes me feel that you're sort of feeling your way forward on this one at the moment, and you'll see where you end up. Is that fair to say?
That's fair. It's fair because there's licensing and royalty models that exist in cathode active material formulations, chemistries, particular chemistries, not so much in the manufacturing technology itself. There is one company that is out there that has a license package. It's just basically a flow sheet that you can buy, and it's an upfront fee and a recurring running royalty, depending on how you want to call it.
Right.
So the concept, or not, I wouldn't say the concept, there are some precedents, but most of the precedents have been on the materials side. So a little bit of exploratory, but the concept doesn't change, that you're bringing a value to the table, we're keeping a piece, the customer's keeping a piece.
But you're doing an environment which is nascent. You're doing an environment where there will, I mean, this is one thing about technology, you know, new technologies come along all the time, and it will be a competitive environment too. So you must have done this with a view to being able to capture a percentage of the market or have some sort of certainty, you know, a joint marketing agreement doesn't actually pay the bills. It's, you know, what you are able to get over the line that will pay those bills. So what did you start this process believing that you could get over the line and what it would be worth in terms of revenue, in terms of margin, or however you want to measure it?
Yeah, it's the golden question that I'm sure everybody wants to be able to then put a value or understand kind of what it could potentially be. I think we see the market being, so North America, Europe, Indo-Pacific region being roughly 2 million tons of LFP by 2035. Obviously, and that, you know, it's a growth trajectory. It's anticipated that it'll represent roughly 40% of the market. It could be higher depending on the mix between nickel-rich and iron-rich. That represents itself roughly about a $40 to $45 billion market opportunity. The market segment we're talking to now, so this is not just reading third-party research. This is our business development team going out, speaking to target customers, understanding their volume profiles. We see that at roughly about $15 billion. So that's our kind of target market. And we believe that if we can capture about 10% of that, we're in good shape. Now, that's a, recognize that's an annual figure. That's, you know, certainly our game plan, if you will, or our strategy. But that's only going to come through the licensing of our technology. And every licensee that we target, we'll usually start at, you know, phase one will be X tons, right? It'll be something like 25,000 tons per year is roughly a phase one. But they will grow as their customer base grows or as the customer they're supplying grows. So that licensee might supply a cell manufacturer that's sending cells to automotive X, Y, Z. They're sending into the energy storage space. They will grow over time. So by us partnering up with Worley, it's allowing us to, rather than build our business in sequence, meaning small sales productions off our existing facility, next phase is we build a plant and then people go, okay, yeah, now I want to license technology. Worley's bringing this ability for us to jointly market with them in parallel to our building development plans.
Right. So this first mover advantage is important. So this recent announcement is actually a really big deal because this linear process, first mover advantage, is going to be so important to you. Because give me an idea of if you make a cell of this, one of these sort of plants, this LFP plant or CAM plants, CAMTEC with the CAM technology, what's the commitment on this on the part of whoever the client or customer is? Because I suspect once they're going to spend a few millions, whatever the millions number you're about to tell me is, it's going to be very hard for other people to kind of insert themselves into that revenue of yours. So can you give me a sense of, you know, what happens when someone says, yes, we think we want to do this with you? Timelines, money, etc.
Yeah, so, you know, plants are generally built to last at least 20 years. So we see these licensing agreements being 15 to 20 years of recurring revenue. We'll aim to do some component of that up front, derived from the value of that CAM package and all the other bits and pieces and value that comes with that. From the point that a customer makes a final investment decision, so that means they have a customer offtake, they've got their site identified, they're going to build their plant, and it'll take them 2 years to build that plant. That from that point forward, we can see some early revenues from, you know, let's say it's a single plant sale, a 25,000 ton plant sale. And once you're in production, then kind of this recurring revenue that continues on for at least 15 years.
Okay. So we just need to work out what that means to you economically, right?
Yeah.
When are you going to be in a position to actually understand what that can mean to you? Because you kind of, we talked about, okay, addressable market. There's a ramp-up period. There's a kind of sales period per sale before revenue starts to flow. There's a kind of, you've got to do multiple versions of that, and you kind of presumably forecast some kind of ramp up. Will you ever give guidance to the market? Are you able to?
I think we'll be in a much better position to be able to give guidance once we have that first sale secured. It's certainly from our perspective, it feels like a more responsible way to do it because we are in a price discovery, if you will, process. But by building up the the Worley Alliance, for example, or the strategic parties like Sumitomo and Metal Mining and Rio Tinto, that helps us not only validate the technology, but it helps us narrow in on that kind of process to be able to then be in a position to help provide some guidance to people.
Right. Okay. I'm going to leave that. I've jumped to the end first because it's probably the most exciting, biggest part of what revenue stream potentially for you guys, unless you tell me different in a second. So let's go back to some of these partners of yours, like the Rios of this world, Sumitomo, et cetera, you know, big companies in their own right, big balance sheets, et cetera. The relationship that they've got with you, they each own, 4.95% respectively. What's the expectation of their relationship with you? Because they have lots of really small investments in small companies all across the world, for, you know, wanting to explore different technology and do different things. How do we know when they are kind of more committed to you, or there is a kind of a commercial relationship, ongoing commercial relationship with them? And what's it going to do for you?
Sure. So I'll start with Rio Tinto first, only because they came into Nano One first in terms of timeline. The interest, the collaboration with Rio Tinto is really focused on developing their iron metal supply production that they have in Quebec for use in our technology to make LFP. So they currently today make roughly 180,000 tons of iron metal powder in Quebec. That's ore refined from a mine in Madagascar and one in Quebec. And it's brought together in a very clean process that currently today supplies automotive, tier one automotive parts manufacturers. So the iron metal powder is used to make stamp and sinter into parts for internal combustion engines. As that market changes from internal combustion engines and shifts away more towards electric vehicles, we're sort of the ideal scenario would be an off-ramp from internal combustion engine sales and an on-ramp from LFP sales. So that's really the core of the Rio Tinto involvement and connection and collaboration. With Sumitomo Metal Mining, just for those that don't know, there's a number of different companies with Sumitomo in their naming convention. But Sumitomo Metal Mining is probably the most integrated miner refiner that actually makes cathode active materials today. So they make a nickel-rich cathode active material for Panasonic today. Panasonic uses that material. They make the cells that go into the Tesla vehicles, for example. That's called an NCA. Sumitomo Metal Mining also has LFP production at small scale at a plant in Vietnam. And what their interest is in collaborating with us, and they invested in September last year, is for our technology to make LFP at a cost competitive scale, both in Japan to supply the Japanese ecosystem, as well as outside Japan, so North America, and targeting some of the automotives outside of Japan. And as well for the nickel-rich, using our technology to make the nickel-rich cathode active materials. They recognize a couple of major issues in the way that cathode active materials are made today. One is the waste stream produced from that sodium sulfate waste stream. That's just become a major permitting roadblock in Finland. That's in the news now. It's only recently become public. So environmental authorities have blocked at least one project because of this waste stream. So Sumitomo understands that outside of certain jurisdictions, that waste stream is intolerable, and we need technologies to change that. Our technology resolves that issue, both for LFP and for NMC.
Great. So what next from them?
From them. So right now we're working with them to get our LFP product to meet their target customer spec. So we have a customer set that together we're working to get the product to meet that spec. And from that point, we'll then be looking at things like co-marketing of that product. And then how do we structure something bigger in the future together, whether it's a joint venture or a license for a LFP plant. And I say LFP because LFP is the most advanced of our technology. And it's where we have that industrial facility in Quebec. So that's our first to market material, if you will.
Right. So you've got two parties who have been involved with you guys for a long time now, who are going through a process, their own internal process to make sure that the end product is right for their customers. Because if you're saying, well, potentially they could pick up one of these LFP plants, right? It means nothing to them. The money involved in building that would mean nothing to them in terms of the size and scale of their balance sheet, their R&D, et cetera. They should be able to move quicker than the kind of conversations that you're having elsewhere on the LFP. So talk to me about this kind of the sales process and how you kind of condense that sales process. How can you demo the product quicker and sell it quicker so you get your quicker to revenue?
Well, I think just continuing to do exactly what we're doing at our Candiac facility now. So I think the strategic value of that asset that we bought in late 2022 is maybe worth a little bit of a discussion because
gladly.
It's demonstrating our technology at scale. So each of the major units of production are at a commercial scale today. So that helps demonstrate and instill confidence in the licensees that we have the technology scaling in place, and we'll make some additional investments to be able to demonstrate that further. But it also serves as a facility to sample and validate off of with the customers of the target licensees. So imagine a scenario where one of our licensees doesn't have to go build a pilot plant of one technology to then make LFP, invest however many millions of dollars to build that pilot plant to then get the customer offtake. Our facility can act as that offtake generating facility.
For sure. But my point is you've got Sumitomo who have been in here. They've invested in you and they have said that you guys have demonstrated this technology works at scale. And the materials perform and the costs are competitive. So what's stopping them going now?
I think that what's stopping them going now is just making sure there's a very long, typically very long customer validation cycle that takes place. And so it's really important. It depends whether it's energy storage as the target market or electric vehicles. Electric vehicles takes much longer. We're talking 2 to 4 years. Energy storage is 6 to 12 months, maybe 18 months. And so as we hone in the product to meet Sumitomo's customer specs, then we'll get to a place where we can send samples with Sumitomo directly to these customers, target customers. I think the other thing to consider is with Sumitomo, it also completely changes the conversation with the automotives downstream of us. So imagine conversation with little old Nano One and a big giant automotive takes a shape and looks a certain way. When we can bring Sumitomo into the conversation and speak to that same automotive, it all of a sudden changes the kind of the tone and the dialogue.
For sure. Can I ask you one thing about that quote from Sumitomo? And that's from the managing executive officer there. You talk about, and the costs are competitive. Does that mean cheaper? Does that mean within tolerance, but given all of the other factors you bring to the table, we don't mind paying a little premium? I mean, and does that change? Can that change? Will it evolve as your own internal research and development changes?
So I think certainly competitive to copying and pasting what we referred to earlier, the solid state process, the process used in China, that technology, copying and pasting that and putting it in Europe or Korea or Japan or North America, Nano One technology is cost competitive. If you compare our technology in any of those jurisdictions against the cost structure in China, that's a 1 million plus ton scale market today. Our technology doesn't have to get to 1 million tons to be cost competitive, but we need to be at scale. So 125,000 ton plant is not going to be as cost competitive as a million ton market. But as we have more plants out there and customers go into those second and third phases, they will get to a place where our technology is cost competitive to the in China cost structure.
Okay, so bifurcated market and markets and pricing presumably coming down the line. I assume there'll be some politics involved in that in terms of incentives and punitive charging. I'm sure it's started already. Okay, in some of the other kind of partnerships and JDAs, again, you're just trying to leverage, you don't want to spend your own money creating these, opening these doors, right? That's the part of the business model that's going on here, which is quite attractive here. In terms of the other revenue streams, though, can you talk to us about, you know, some of the other options available to you? I've been sort of hogging one part of the story. So what else is going on?
So in the existing Candiac plant that we have now, we're at about 200 tons per annum scale right now. We'll be looking to make some, you know, moderate capital investments to expand that production to 500-600 tons, and then we can take it above 1,000 tons. Right. Why that's relevant?
And you want to do that partly because of the demonstration component, but that's actually going to generate revenue, right?
That's correct. So beyond just selling samples, for example, it's these kind of smaller offtakes, these customers that are a few hundred tons type scale. And those are usually niche customers, and those would be a great way for us to essentially offset our burn rate. I mean, at the end of the day, we have sales that can support the business continuing while being able to drive to offtakes either for our own future growth or for to support the licensees.
Got it.
And then other revenue streams, we look a little bit farther down the road. So, you know, the market is projected to undergo tremendous growth. We're looking to grab a piece of that market. As we get to a place where we have licenses out there, we also see that some of these big companies, they don't really like investing in R&D. That's a cost item that impacts their EBITDA. Nano One is a technology company. We have an interest in continuing to innovate. So maybe we improve the process a little bit. We help drive down costs a little bit more. Rory brings some ideas to the table. We can then go back into that existing license base and essentially sell innovation as a service. Right? So it could be anything from enhancing the maintenance routines because we're seeing the data and how that plant's being operated, to we can increase uptime, reduce waste. We could tweak some of the control flows, or we can introduce a new piece of equipment. And Worley's, you know, come up with some innovative idea. If you replace this with this, this is going to drop your OPEX and you'll have a very rapid payback. And so these kind of are future add-ons that we see essentially working with our licensee base to act as future additional revenue beyond that kind of first sale and the recurring royalty.
You've got to get this concentrate into your plant to kind of process it to create this black mass, right? And multiple feeds coming in there. Do you buy that at that point?
Okay.
Or is that owned by the end customer and it's just processed through your plant? In which case, you know, what are the kind of margins that you're capturing at all of those phases? With your own plants, I'm talking about.
It really depends on who the end customer is. So if it's automotive, it'll be they'll be much more involved in securing the raw materials, the battery metals and the battery chemicals. In which case, the plant acts as the conversion facility, the transformation facility, to turn it into something usable, and they'll pay a cost plus a markup for that, right? And that's kind of generally how the automotive works, anyways. So they'll look after securing the key pieces. In the early years, as supply chains are getting set up, we've already gone through the process of qualifying a series of raw material inputs so that we'll probably work collaboratively with automotives on that side. In niche market players, so the smaller volumes off of, say, our Candiac facility, for example, that's very much something where the niche players don't want to deal with that. That's something we deal with, and so that's why it's been important for us to qualify and validate and build these relationships with suppliers.
Okay.
Energy storage, it probably depends on size. But I think for the early days, it's very much, we'll look after that aspect. And so I think part of your question might go back to, how do you deal with feedstock supply and the working capital and you managing that working capital around that? And it's definitely a key consideration. And so building up these relationships with these feedstock suppliers early is very important, as well as planning ahead from a working capital management perspective.
Man, you don't want to sell too many plants elsewhere, do you? Then I'll be eating your lunch. That's from
that. When our licensing, our licensees will deal with all of that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Really, really interesting model, actually. Fantastic model. So in terms of the Ford G&A, it's going to be more and more of it's going to move towards, I guess, marketing programs with your partners like Worley, et cetera. I mean, is that an exclusive arrangement, or can you talk to other partners around the world in different geographies? I know they're global, but you know what I mean? There will be other like European, more European focused ones.
Yeah. For instance. Well, so there's no restrictions on licensing our technology to other parties for the development of a fully engineered, we call it design once, build many, a CAM package as we defined it. That's something we're dedicated to working with Worley on.
Okay. Great update, fantastic. I mean, I like the story, like the way you're going about it. More guidance once you're able to will obviously help us understand how the heck we value you. Because I think the trouble sometimes with the industry is that it's relatively nascent. It's people find it very hard to actually work out without a kind of revenue forecast. What you're worth, what those multiples should be, and on what basis. So exciting times in the sector. But I guess, as you would say yourself, probably a lot more heavy lifting to do. Appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Matthew. And totally, completely acknowledge the valuation dilemma, largely why we try to work with research analysts to get the story out there, to put the valuations onto it. We educate them and inform them. And so we just had some new coverage a week and a half ago, which was great to see.
Great. What did you tell them that allowed them to value you? Help me.
Well, we had to get a little bit more into the weeds and into the details on things to inform their financial model.
Like revenue?
Yes. Like revenue.
Like margin? You gave them revenue margin, but not me. Cheers. Thanks. I'll read their report then. Okay. I will read the report and do a little bit of digging before we write this up as well. So appreciate it, Alex. Have a great rest of the day. We'll see you soon.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you for having us.